I am James Salinas.
And I'm Scott Wells.
We're going on an interesting excursion today. Where are we going?
We are going someplace exciting. Liberty, Texas, on a ghost hunt.
Yes. No, we're going to go out with some real ghost enthusiasts. We're going to take a look at a very old historic hotel. We'll see if we can recapture some creepy sounds and some video. We'll see what happens.
I hope we can. You know, this will be something really cool to go along with other guys and women who are involved with this also, who are also ghost hunters. Because, you know, we've been trying to find ghosts ourselves for a number of years and trying to seek the truth by doing the seances we've been doing over the past half a decade, practically, I guess. And so I'm kind of excited to see what these other guys are doing. You know, we've had, of course, ghost hunters who have come into La Carafe to see whether or not that we actually have ghosts or if they can pick up some sort of spirits. And so this way, we saw the TV monitors and all the stuff that they brought in, so I'm kind of excited to see what kind of equipment that these other guys use.
Yeah, we're going to kind of get a behind-the-scenes look. We'll take a look at what they say, what they're doing, and just kind of observe and just kind of go along for the ride.
So we're just going to exactly be observers rather than participants. Although I noticed that you've got some things packed over there as well for ghost hunting.
Well, actually, we will be participants. We have some EMF meters. I brought along with me some audio recorders, the video camera.
Right.
We've got several cameras we're going to shoot with. And so we'll see what we get.
So we'll be doing the night vision type
The camera can shoot into total darkness. So we'll see what we capture. And the audio recordings, you know, we'll see if we can capture some ghostly voices.
Now, the audio recordings, again, this is a digital thing, so it's not a taped thing, because apparently it picks up better on digital.
Right. We're going to be using some two different digital audio recorders, an Olympus dictation-type stereo recorder, and a Zoom professional audio recorder as well.
Now, we'll get some more information about this location tonight as they give us some more details on that, but can you give me a little bit right now, just some background? What do you know about the place?
Well, I purposely didn't read up about the Odd Hotel, although there is, they do advertise it as a haunted hotel.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have had a nephew who's gone and stayed there. He says it's really spooky,
wow,
kind of creepy, and
yeah.
You know, so I'm really just trying to look forward to it, and I didn't want to look too much into it, so that way I can immerse myself in the whole evening and
right,
find out what about the history and everything else.
Good point, because I don't have any expectations necessarily. However, I agree that if you kind of look into some of that, then if those expectations are not met, if something isn't seen, you're going to say, well, I thought we were supposed to see or hear such and such. So I'd rather kind of go with an open mind.
Well, I'm also hoping to interview a lot of the people that are going to be there, some of the people that actually do the ghost hunting, and maybe we can find out what their techniques are, some experiences they've had, and just hear their stories.
Looking forward to it. Should be some fun.
All right. Well, let's go for a ride.
Let's go. Okay, we're now over in Jack's restaurant, just going to be taking a dinner break before we get into the paranormal activities, and I've got Maria Santos with me. Hello, Maria.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, and Jennifer, what's your last name?
Jennifer Hansen.
Hansen, and what is your official title, actually, then, Jennifer?
Founder of Southern Paranormal Investigations.
And this organization's been around for how long?
We have been around since 2007.
Uh-huh. And tell me more about it.
Well, we started Southern Paranormal... I can't even say it. Southern Paranormal Investigations, basically because we wanted to offer to our clients more of a scientific-based investigation.
Right.
And also our goal is helping people. And a lot of teams, one of the things that we have noticed is that they would go in, they'd do the investigation, they'd get their evidence, and then they'd just kind of leave the families high and dry. They wouldn't really follow up. They wouldn't try and, you know, help resolve whatever the problem may be. So that was one of our main goals, was not just to investigate and get evidence, although for the paranormal field that is important to us, but also to do that follow-up and to work with the clients until, you know, the issue's resolved to whatever that may be for the particular client.
And so for tonight, we are actually going into the Odd Hotel over here in Liberty, but are there other places, I assume, that you travel around just Texas or the country or what?
Oh, absolutely. We've done several places all throughout Texas. We travel, you know, not just within the Houston area where we're based from, but we've gone North Texas, East Texas, all over Texas. We're also part of a network that we do live broadcasts and that sort of thing. So we have network teams, and that's stationed out of Florida. So we've done a lot of investigations in the Florida area area as well.
And Maria, that you've been involved with this for how long?
I've been involved with this team for off and on about 2 years. And I've actually, in the last year, been to 7 different states having to do my own investigations and stuff and do readings.
Now, I was going to say about readings, because really you're more of a sentient or a psychic. What would you actually call yourself?
I'm a medium.
A medium.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm a large.
Yeah. Jamie's a large over there. This.
So you have traveled around, and during these things, tell me about some of the unusual things you've seen or felt at some of these.
I pretty much see or feel, I mostly feel at every place that I've gone to.
Yeah.
Actually, the most recently, I went to a place, a museum in Longview, where I felt a lot of things happening while I was doing readings, and I actually felt somebody touching me regularly, kind of let me know he was there.
Right, like on your shoulder or your leg? Or
up my leg, my shoulder, touching my shoulders, things like that. And what ended up happening is later on in the evening, we had what we call a ghost box, and people were talking, people who knew the ghost that was there were coming up and talking to the ghost, and it was just making all sorts of noises, letting them know that he was around. So it was pretty neat.
And where was that again?
Longview Museum.
Okay. And that's the one that Sandy has, is that right?
Yeah.
What's her last name, Sandy?
Sandy Emmons.
Emmons, yeah. And have you been up investigating that one also?
I have not been up there yet, no. I did go when Sandy was a curator at another museum. We did some work there before, but I've not been to Longview yet.
As I recall, I've been talking with her before, that it seems like when she was a curator, that the museum, they didn't want them to talk too much about, they're kind of trying to downplay the haunted side of
the activity, right. Yeah, I think it kind of started to where they were okay with it, and then decided they really didn't like that slant on their museum, which happens a lot. You know, a lot of times people will either really want the public to know about the paranormal activity, because sometimes it will draw in a lot of revenue, and sometimes they don't want that outlook on their.
Which is why I think I find this kind of interesting with the Hotel Ott that we're going to, because there are people who live there, is that right? And so they're cool with that, and they really promote this.
Right. Now, Susan, the owner of the Ott, she's actually had this establishment open to the paranormal field and investigators for, I believe, 11 years now. And so this is something that she has promoted, that she's encouraged, and really helped the paranormal field out a lot with a place that they can go investigate.
And so, again, you have been involved with this and then going to the Ott for the past 5 years or so.
Actually, we've only been to the Ott one time previous, and that was, I believe, in December, was our first visit to the Ott. And when we met Susan, and, you know, she's such a wonderful lady, we got to know the hotel itself, some of the activity that goes on there. But also one of the things that really stuck out to us was, one, the way she has kept herself open to the paranormal field, and two, there's a lot of things that she would like to do to restore the building that she hasn't been able to, and she'd really like to keep the building not only updated and as a landmark, but in the era, you know, the time era that's appropriate for it. So that's, we really want to help her out with that and do some events like tonight to try and help gain that revenue for her.
Now, how do you go about finding these kinds of places then?
Well, a lot of times they come to us. We usually actually do not go looking for locations. The majority of the time they come to us. There are a few places that, you know, we've come across that we just really would be interested in doing. And in that case, we'll contact, you know, the owners or managers, whoever the person may be, and just kind of start a rapport with them. You know, even send a, you know, investigation request, that kind of thing.
And you say that you're helping people then also, so that way that they feel like there's been some presence and they contact you and they ask you then to come in and to check it out and to give them some closure or something? Or
sometimes they're looking for closure. Sometimes they're not, you know, happy with the activity that's going on, or people are being frightened or harmed. And sometimes they just want validation. They want to know, you know, am I crazy or is this really going on? So it varies on the reasons they contact us.
Well, they're getting ready to have dinner served here shortly, so let me kind of start to wrap up. Tell me your website, how they can get in touch with you.
Our website is spi-texas.org.
There you go. Maria, what if they want to get in touch with you?
Right now, I'm in the process of building a new website, but I can be contacted through SPI, and we can work from there.
Oh, there we go. They're calling our names. Just, or they can call you.
like that, I guess.
Yes,
all right. So for now, that's Scotty out. All right, Scott Wells back here for the Magic Word, and we are in the Ott Hotel, and I'm here with the proprietor and owner, Susan McCain, is it? Pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us here then this evening. So this isn't the first time that the Paranormal Society has been here, I guess?
Oh, no. We've had 56 groups here.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Well, 56, to sound like you count them. You know exactly how many have been here. Now, you've owned this place for how long, Susan?
This is my 11th year.
Okay. And how did you come by this? How did you end up buying it?
Husband's fault.
Okay. He thought it was a good idea.
Well, we were down here and he was working, and we're originally from Dallas.
Okay.
And
in the oil field business, I guess?
Yeah, he was getting ready to retire.
Yep.
And so he came home one day and I was packing up the house, getting ready to move back to Dallas.
Yep.
And he's like, "You know that old hotel down there?" And I was like, "Yes." And he's like, "Well, you know, it's for sale." I was like, "Well, that's nice." I kept packing. A few weeks went by. He came home again. He said, "Well, you know, the granddaughter of the Otts is selling that place." And he says, "Let's go look at it." And I'm like, "Nope, you go look at it." Then another week went by, so I thought I'd try that reverse psychology thing. You know?
Yeah, like, how'd that work out?
I was like, "Fine, let's go look at it." Yeah. So we came and we looked at it, and I was like, "Do you know what it was going to take to fix that place?"
Yeah.
I said, "You have lost your mind." And I knew Mr. Wiggins, who owned the bank across the street, had put a bid in on it.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to knock it down and turn it into a parking lot.
Okay.
And so...
Yeah, because it's right next to the railroad track.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like 12 feet from the track, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I told him, I said, "Well, okay, you go ahead and put a bid on it, honey."
Just, yeah.
Because you know, I knew there was no way.
You're going to get it.
Going to get it. 2 days later, we get this phone call. And it says, "They've accepted your bid." And
yeah.
I'm like, "What?
Come down, pick up
there
the keys."
No way in this world that they accepted that bid.
Yeah.
And I said, "What are we going to do?"
Goodness sakes, yeah.
You know, and I said...
And they had tenants here already, too.
No, there was only the manager and one older tenant that lived downstairs.
Okay.
The city had condemned upstairs.
Oh. Mm.
So nobody was allowed to live.
Mm-hmm.
So I cashed in my 401k and our savings, and we bought this crazy building.
Wow.
Not knowing what goes on in this building.
You didn't know the history of the place?
No.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, that is amazing.
And then when I started digging up the history is when I got our first historical marker.
Okay.
And it took me 5 years to get the historical marker on the building.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we're working on our second historical marker for the land.
Mm-hmm.
And all the paperwork's in Austin. So we're just waiting to see if they're going to approve
it. When it's designated as a historical place, then there are certain things you can and can't do as far as remodeling. Is that true?
Exactly.
Yeah.
We put everything back.
Mm-hmm.
So the colors.
The way it was.
And the original colors. We had to take some walls down to put it back.
Now, how did you find out, then, the history of this place? It wasn't until after that you purchased it and then realized that what?
Well... One, we have extra guests that have checked in and never checked out.
Never check out.
That's why all
like
the ghost hunters
Hotel
are here.
Hotel California.
Exactly. And then when I started doing the history for the historical marker, the property you're standing on in 1831 belongs to James B. Woods. And James B. Woods is an original signature of the Texas Declaration of Independence.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So you're standing on his property.
Even more historical, sure.
Even more historical. 100 years before this building was ever built. Most people don't realize Liberty's the third oldest city in Texas.
In Texas? Did not know that. Did not
yeah.
know that.
Huh. So when it was originally purchased, it was Mexican-held, and the land grants from the Mexican government were given to the Texicans living on Mexican property.
Okay, interesting.
So it was called Atascocita Libertad. 100 years before it was ever Liberty. So there's a lot of history. So the more I dug,
yeah,
trying to find out exactly what this piece of property was that we had bought, the more I learned. I am not a Texas history person, but I am now.
You are now. Now, did you start to find out some of the haunted history about it first, or was that what someone told you and then you got interested and started digging into it, or did it just evolve? How did you learn?
Well, the managers had left notebooks and things, mm-hmm. and one of the managers, Stella, still was here when we purchased the building, and she stayed with us about 6 months after we purchased the building. And so she started telling us a few things, and I would have told you hogwash.
Sure.
Doesn't happen, not true.
And had you been living here for a while and you hadn't experienced anything?
Right. Okay. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
No, not.
Right.
No. You know, maybe they need some Prozac and a therapist.
Okay.
But then things started evolving and things started, you know, weird mm-hmm. stuff. So I'd go back and look at the manager's logs, you know, and say, okay, well, mm-hmm. okay, that's happened before, but I wouldn't pay too much attention to it. But then the one thing that changed dramatically was when the fire marshal said we could open the hotel rooms and we were ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I was upstairs in what we call Miss Lucy's room now.
Okay.
Because we now know that that's the lady who passed away in that room.
Okay.
Well, I was upstairs and I was hanging up curtains in the bed and, you know, putting it all together. And it used to kind of creep me upstairs. And I didn't like to go up there by myself.
Uh-huh.
I'd always have to make sure, you know, the maintenance man was there or something.
You didn't know what it was, just a feeling you had.
Yeah, just
yeah.
feeling. But then mm-hmm. I'm like, look, I'm an older woman at this point. I have 7 kids, grandkids.
Right.
You know, like, this is ridiculous. So everything was fine until just about like this happens.
Just kind of brush it.
Something goes across my neck and pulls my hair up.
Oh, my. And there was nobody or anything around.
No, there was nobody. I freaked out.
Yeah.
And I would have made a sailor proud. I used every word I knew.
And some you didn't.
Plus, I'm supposed to be, I made up. And I was like, oh, no, 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 no. You are not going to touch me,
yeah.
my kids.
Right.
And I think that was their attempt to get me to believe that they were here.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that, I was still like, okay, well, that's a real coincidence. But then things started getting more and more frequent. And then my kids started saying, Mommy, did you see that lady in the laundry room? My husband would be upstairs working on something. The sheetrock guy crews we had, they'd come in and they're like, we're not going up there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? And they're like, not till you get that man out of that room. I was like, nobody lives here.
Yeah.
There
yeah.
is no man upstairs. And so then you start going back to the logs of the managers before. And then even Herbert Daniels, which is the son-in-law of the Otts, an older gentleman at this point, he brought us several pictures of the Ott Hotel in the early 30s and 40s. And he wouldn't come in the building. And I was like, come in, have a cup of coffee. I want to talk to you. You
sure.
know, I need some history.
History, sure.
And he's like, no, this place was haunted when they built it.
When they built it. So it
when
wasn't.
They built it.
So when you're talking about, I heard you say they, it wasn't just Lucy, and there was a man and a lady and more that was on the property
exactly.
before the building. Was this a, perhaps, a cemetery or something? Or
Some of the paperwork suggests that the last 10 rooms of the hotel was 40 rooms. Originally, and then things were going so well between the oil field boom that was going on in the railroad, they extended it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they extended it onto the Catholic property.
Okay.
Okay, that the Catholic Church had sold. And that's also where the Catholic Church at the time had run what they call the Chop Hospital during the Civil War.
I can imagine what that means.
Yeah. So they'd bring the soldiers in on the train.
Yeah.
And then, you know,
oh.
and they
do
would
the surgeries right there.
Mm-hmm. And the Catholic Church and the nuns and the priests actually ran the hospital here till the 1970s.
Okay.
So I found out that that was on this property.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went over to the Catholic Church and asked them, you know, for paperwork and archives and stuff,
right.
will come to find out part of the cemetery is also
wow.
In the alley and on the property behind us.
Things, souls.
Exactly. So it's extremely odd.
Occupied.
Yeah, yes, occupied.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have quite a few psychics come. Some have been really good, some have been really awful. But when you get 10, 11 years and you get the same amount of different people that come in, different groups that come in.
Right.
And you get someone who's supposed to be a psychic or a sensitive, and they tell you the same thing somebody told you 4, 5, 6 years ago. Or a group comes in and they're like, we saw this lady standing in the hallway. Here's a picture of her.
Right.
And I can go to the computer and pull up another picture of her.
That they wouldn't have known about at all.
That, right, mm-hmm. because we don't tell them.
Sure.
You know, I'm kind of one of those still kind of skeptic things.
Uh-huh. You're still a skeptic.
Yeah, because it's like, why should I tell you if you're a psychic?
You should know. Go on, exactly.
Yeah, you should know.
Exactly.
So when the groups come, I don't really tell them a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll give them, if they want the tour, I'll give them the history part.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't actually tell them what goes on. Because I want to see what they find.
So they can truly be a hunter.
Exactly.
That's right. Awesome. Well, Susan, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
I appreciate that. So, well, I guess I should wrap up by just asking what perhaps was the most unusual sighting or experience that you've ever had.
Oh.
Not that others have seen or you've heard about, but you personally have experienced.
Oh, when I got pinched.
When you got pinched. So it wasn't just brushed up against your face, you
no,
actually felt
I
a
got
pinch.
Pinched. Yeah.
On your cheek?
Yeah, no. On the
on
back
your arm,
of your arm
your
right
arm.
Here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Enough that it hurt, you could feel it.
Oh, enough to leave bruises.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Yes. My husband was out of town working, and I was upstairs in one of the hotel rooms doing something, and we've each slept in every room in the building.
Yeah.
And so I had gone to bed that night. And my husband worked late nights, you know, and mm-hmm. it was about 2 in the morning when he should have been coming home, but
yeah.
he was out of town. And so I reached over there, and he wasn't there, you know. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, and
right.
looked at the clock, and then
sure.
so I rolled back over. And in a little while, I got this pinch on my arm, and I come up out of the bed.
Yeah.
And so, and I was like, oh, no, uh-uh. And so I just had this little meltdown in the middle of my bedroom. They would have locked me up if they'd seen me. And finally, my husband came home about 2-3 days later, and I told him about the incident. He said, no, your arm was asleep, you know, you slept on it wrong or something. And I pulled my arm up, and I said, you want to explain this?
Yeah, how to explain the bruise.
And he put his fingers on there, and it was a perfect man's handprint on my arm.
Wow.
That's been my biggest...
It wasn't a pinch, it was like a grab.
It was like a grab.
Yeah.
I've had my bedroom exercised 3 times in the 11 years we've been here.
By Catholic priests? By
one by a Catholic priest and twice by a shaman out of Beaumont.
Interesting.
So,
wow.
Yeah, in the kids' rooms. I have them done once a year just in case.
Just in case?
Just in case.
On any particular occasion? I mean, like Christmas or just whenever?
No, just whenever, you know.
Yeah.
I know it sounds kind of weird, and
no.
I probably think I'm crazy, but, you know, you can tell when there's an extra person in your room.
And it's about time for an exorcism.
Yeah, it's about time to have them, you know.
Exercise. Move
go
on.
Go down the hallway, you know,
yeah.
there's 50 rooms in this hotel. Just,
50 rooms.
Yeah, just
okay.
go
yeah.
ahead and go haunt somebody.
Move on down.
Move on yeah. down the hallway.
That's right. Keep going around this circle.
Exactly.
And okay.
Exactly.
All right. Susan, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
We're looking forward to being here tonight.
All right. Awesome.
Okay. Paranormal Investigations. And my name is Jennifer Hansen. I'm the founder. And Randy Hancock is our lead investigator. And Cheryl Knoll is new to the team. She's been with us, what?
Months.
Several months now. And back here?
Just me.
Just, yeah. I was about to call you Stinky Bob.
<Good lady.
laughs> Shane McDaniel.
We spelled Stinky Bob last
yeah.
Here.
Yeah, we did.
We did.
And then
did.
We have Jerry Cox. Jerry Cox, I guess we're like, do we still call you a spiritualist? Are you still doing all that?
Oh, yeah.
Reiki Master. And
you.
Joe Stidham's kind of like one of our tech guys, more into carrying all the equipment. Yeah. And, of course, back there, Maria Santos works with us a lot, and she is a psychic medium. And we have, I know I showed y'all earlier, we've got all of y'all split into teams, Team 1, Team 2, Team 3. So y'all can look and check and see which team you're on. Your team will not change during the night. But what's going to happen is we're going to have 2 of us with y'all's teams for each sweep. And we're going to rotate our people out because we all work a little bit differently. And so that way you'll get to experience each style of investigating that we each all, you know, have to bring to it as well. And we'll have the sweeps. Here it is. The different sweeps. Basically what we call a sweep is when we're doing an investigation, it's usually an hour time span, and then we take a break. So sweep 1 will be an hour, and we've got 1 team downstairs and 1 team upstairs. And then the extra team, team 3, or whichever team it'll be on break. and we'll rotate out with that as well, and we'll rotate out between up and down. So everybody will get a chance to go all the different areas that we're open to investigate, and you'll get a chance to break, you know, relax. Yes?
I'm sorry, but how many total teams did you say
there were? There are three teams, okay. And we'll have two teams investigating at a time. So we'll have two teams on and one off on break. And upstairs, we also have Command Central set up, and that's where we have the DVR and the monitor and all of that. When we're done here, we'll transfer all this equipment up there, and that's where you'll come if you want to take a break. You can break there, or you can break out front, or if you want to gather some equipment for your sweep and that kind of thing. And we're going to go ahead and start on some of the basic do's and don'ts of investigation, and we'll go through all of our equipment and get you exposed to that a little bit, and we'll also talk about some of the protocols that we use while investigating as well. So who here has investigated before? Well, of course, Maria. And who's, I know it's y'all's first time. Anybody else?
First time.
Yep.
Is it really, Jamie?
It is.
Wow, I didn't think it was Jamie's first time. Fran?
Yes.
Is it your first time?
First time.
And Tracy?
Yeah, first time.
Oh, wow, okay. We've got a lot of first-timers. So, excellent. So, as we're going through this, if you have any questions or anything, just go ahead and raise your hand, and we'll cover those as well. So I'll let Joe start out with the
do's and the don'ts.
The do's and the don'ts.
All right. There's a couple things, you know, I'm sure y'all are aware of it, that you just don't do. One of the things is when you're looking for a location to investigate, you need to get permission. That's the bottom line. If you don't get permission, you're trespassing. And that's, you know, that's bad. If you get permission, get it in writing. That way, if any of the authorities or anything like that show up, you have everything you need. You have it in writing. The owner says, I can be here. There's other things you don't do is you don't go ghost hunting alone. There's a reason for that. Mainly is safety. If you're alone, you're in an old decrepit building, you could fall and get hurt, and nobody knows you're out there. It could be where you couldn't get to your phone or you couldn't get out of there, and, you know, it could turn real bad real quick. Another thing is that you want to do is have somebody with you is for validation. If something happens or you hear a noise, somebody that's with you can also help you. Hey, that's the car outside. Or, you know, it's that kind of a deal like that. Did you see that light? Yeah, that's the train coming down the tracks. So, you know, that's another reason, too. When you're in these locations, a lot of them are, like I said, decrepit buildings. A lot of places like this are visited by something even worse, gang members, homeless people. They live here. There's a place for them to get in, get out of the elements. Gang members, they see it as their territory. If you get into an area and there's gang members and you're by yourself, it's going to be a very bad night for you. Because, you know, I mean, I don't probably need to go any further on what could happen, but it's things like this that you got to watch out for. Also, if you're confronted by the police when you're there, we've been on investigations before in cemeteries, the police show up. They want to make sure you're not desecrating graves, vandalizing, drinking beer, whatever. when you're confronted by them, if you have written permission to be there, you're allowed to be there, then don't be worried about it. They're doing their job. They want to make sure you're not doing something you're not supposed to be doing. And if you have the written permission, then everything's going to be fine. Most of them, when you get through talking to them, they find out you're the legit. Then they'll start telling you a few stories, or they can. It's a good source. They can tell you about another place that may be haunted that you might be interested in. So, like I said, they're doing their job. Just cooperate with them. Be calm. You know, there's no reason to get, you know, upset unless you have something to hide, and most of us don't. But that's, you know, some of us do. Also, remember when you're in cemeteries can be very dangerous. It's dark. A lot of these cemeteries are old, some sunken graves. There's holes. I don't know if some of y'all have seen or not, but some of the graves have small fencing around the graves. You can't hardly see that in the night. You can trip over that. It's made out of iron. Very easily, you know, injure you, damage something. And another thing is, like, if you're out in these rural areas, remember, wildlife live in these cemeteries. You can run into anything, a wild animal, snakes, spiders, anything like that. So be careful. It's good to go out before you go and walk the area. Find out where that pothole is. Find out where You know, is there a hole there, something living in that hole, something burrowed under that tombstone? You don't want to run across a pissed off mama coon because she thinks you're going to get her babies. That's just kind of one of the things that, you know, you might look for. Basically, I know of a cemetery, and Jerry's been there with me too. One of the hazards that you don't know, it's Olivewood. It's there in Houston. It's an old slave cemetery. We've been there before, and part of the graves is actually washing into the gully. You're walking through thick brush, looking, and next thing you know, it drops off 20, 30 foot down. If you're in the dark and you don't see that, you're going to be in the bottom of that ravine. That's just one of the things that you need to watch out for. That's basically the main do's and don'ts that I have.
Maria had something to add also.
We just recently had a death of one of our fellow investigators. She went into an abandoned building, a bunch of them had, and she breathed in a fungus, and it went into her lungs, and she just died in, what, November
yeah,
of did. Last year? So he's suggesting, especially if it's like an old place that's been, you know, closed up for a long time, please wear masks, because, I mean, he just lost his wife to that. And she was, I think it was 2 months between when she was in that place and when she died.
See, there's a lot of things you just got to watch out for, and that's what we're trying to get you to learn. We've all heard the stories. I heard the story about the ghost hunters on the train track. The train came, and the guy got killed. That was, a year or two ago?
Mm-hmm.
It's dangerous. That staircase may look sturdy, and when you go to the second floor halfway up, gravity takes over. It's just, that's the things you got to be looking out for. Any questions on any of that, or...
Written permission, but if you go into a cemetery, you're not going to be able to have written permission, are you?
On the cemeteries, it's good to call the local police for the cemetery you're going to and let them know that you're going to be out there investigating.
They ever laugh at you? I mean, are they good with that?
No, they're pretty good with it. That way, if an officer does show up, you know, they know that you're legit.
Mm. Yeah, let them know before you go, this is what we're doing. Trust me, they've seen a lot worse things. They've seen a lot funnier things. And like I said, they're doing their job. They want to know why you're there.
More and more people, I guess, are really believing in
charity. Yes, there's a lot of people who believe in it that just don't tell you they believe in it.
A lot of cemeteries are closed at night.
They are.
At dark, they'll close the gates. If their gates are closed, don't do like what he and I have done on a couple of occasions. And either hop the fence or go under it, just to get that thrill.
Yeah, if the gate's open and you know, it's an open cemetery, you can go in. But like they're saying, if the gates are closed, don't even attempt to get in.
So technically, cemeteries are private property, isn't that correct?
Yes.
Well,
yes,
and there is a law in Texas that does dusk till dawn law. You're not supposed to be in a cemetery from after dusk till the sun comes up in the morning. So
you think the police would give you permission
there? Yeah, we've never had a problem.
As far as a cemetery goes, you're going to want to look for who is either the caretaker. If there's a rectory or something like that around the cemetery, there's going to be someone in charge of that cemetery, and that's who you're going to want to get in touch with. The police can't really give you that permission whether or not you can be on or off the property. A lot of times, you know, they'll come by if you're being cool, whatever. They're not going to do anything about it, but you really should always get that permission first. So go through the proper channels of who that would be. All right, Joe's going to talk about, we're going to start talking about some of our equipment and expose you guys to that and let you know, the different types of equipment that we use. No, sure, absolutely. And the proper use of that equipment as well. And the first thing that Joe's going to talk about is the full spectrum. So I'm going to go ahead and pass these out to y'all while he gets started.
Okay, I'm going to read the definition of what full spectrum is. Full spectrum is actually one of the newest tools that you see coming out. A lot of people are starting to use it. You start to see a lot of people on TV using it. Full spectrum is a term used to describe wavelengths that fall into a full range of electromagnetic radiation frequencies, known as electromagnetic spectrum. What you have here on this paper is this chart here. This is visible light. This is what the human eye is capable of seeing, right in this area right here. There's your color spectrum. That's how you see color. Anything outside of that is not visible to our human eyes. Infrared cameras can pick up into the infrared, and this is the theory that spirits move through infrared. They're able also, when you get into the spectrum, you get into the ultraviolet light. the cameras are able to pick up some ultraviolet ranges. Anything above that you see is X-ray, gamma, and below is microwave and radio waves. These are what the cameras do. They pick up light from these spectrums, from the infrared and from the ultraviolet light. That's what we can't see with our eyes, and that's what they do. One of the tricks you can do is you can take the remote from your house, put it at the camera, and then push the button and look at it in the camera. You'll see it light up. Take it away, look at it with your eyes, you can't see it. That's an infrared light that it sends out, a signal. Same way here, and that's the theory behind it. Just remember that all this is theory. It's basic theory. People's picked up stuff in these different spectrums, and that's why it's out there today. Any questions on that, or anybody got anything about that? I know that's kind of a new thing that's coming out, but that's basically it. It's not really as hard or simple or hard as you think it is. It's pretty simple. Here you go. This is a full spectrum camera. Y'all got one? Here, y'all want to pass this around and just look through the viewer?
Those are made like that.
These
correct?
Are made. Actually, what they do is they take a piece of film and they put it over the lens inside, and it filters out.
You have to go in and pop the little black thing out first.
Don't they remove something the first, right?
Yeah,
they take the filter out and then they add a piece in there.
Yeah, a little filter.
The thing that you add is just the filler.
That all is all it is.
So any camera can actually see from infrared up to full spectrum. But what happens is the manufacturers put in
to filter that out.
Yeah, they actually modify to see that.
Yeah, because we don't see it.
The remote that I'm talking about, that's in your infrared areas. That's what that operates in. Try it at home one day, the camera, and then do that, and you'll see the light flash. And that's just an example. What you can't see with your eyes, but the camera is able to pick up. This is called a bluminator. It actually produces blue light that gets into the ultraviolet light part of the spectrum. We have a plug on somewhere.
Yeah, back here.
We're gonna plug it up for you. It's called the bluminator. You'll see why it's called a bluminator. This is supposed to enhance the ultraviolet light. Supposedly, the study is that spirits actually increase activity in blue light. They decrease in other light spectrum and other lights that are in the spectrum.
If you look on the light spectrum, you'll see that when you get towards the blue light, it has a higher level of EMF that's given off, which theory, that could be. Oh, there's some of them going up. Kind of like some of the other devices we'll show you in just a minute, like the EMF pump. When you give off higher levels of EMF, that in theory could give the spirits something to work with.
Well, it gives them energy to, manifest.
Now, I'm too technical, I'm sorry. I'm an engineer, but when you see the blue light, you're actually kind of at that borderline of your visible and your...
Yes, that's right.
If you get a little farther into your ultraviolet, you wouldn't see the
light. No, you really don't see, and that's,
Right.
Now, like I said, on this chart here, it shows you here what the human eye is capable of seeing.
So the reason you have that kind of... Is the theory felt that you can maybe pick up more?
Well, basically what we have is a lot of our network teams got together, and these are teams that we work in collaboration with a lot. And we experiment with things, equipment and ideas and methodologies a lot. And this is one of the things that was experimented with the network teams. And the teams went out and investigated using the blue lights, and they also used red lights. And one of the things that they found documenting their activity levels and, why is the word going from my mind? Evidence. Thank you. Evidence. Was that when they're running the blue light, the activity level would increase versus no lights at all. When they run the red lights, it would actually decrease. And this is something that was discovered not just with one team or two teams, but several teams within the network that work together on that project as well. And other teams who have adapted this method outside of our network are finding the same type of findings as well with that.
Activity level increases, you're saying, like if you take it with a spectral camera or something like that, is that where you see that it increases?
Well, some of the things that actually increased were the amount of audio picked up, EVP captures, that sort of thing. Some of the teams had more experiences as far as physical experiences, being touched, even hearing disembodied voices. just the range of activity increased. So they would do, you know, investigations, and investigations done in the same location too. So we're not talking about different areas, but in the same location, with, you know, no lights utilized whatsoever, the blue light or the red light. And that's what they found.
So you think they're harvesting the energy from the light?
I think they're just attracted to it more. I mean, think about it this way. If you went into a room that had red lights and you went into a room that had blue lights, which would you prefer? I think the majority of us would prefer the blue because it's softer on the light, on your eyes.
It's easier to view.
Would you really? Not me.
Based on your question, Fran.
I think that might be a preference.
One of the theories in the field is EMF, which is electromagnetic field. And one of the theories is that the higher level of EMF that's put off, there's a greater chance of activity, more activity captured. And it's kind of thought of as, I'm sure you've either heard of or even seen on TV, where teams will go into a location with full batteries. And they start investigating, and all of a sudden they have battery drainage, and they have no batteries, no battery life anymore. And the theory is that the spirits are pulling that energy from the batteries, that they're using that to manifest or, you know, do the disembodied voices, whatever it is that they might do. And so based on the blue light theory would be that it gives off a higher range of EMF than the red lights would do, and especially versus that no lights would do. And so it gives a little more of that EMF. And we have here the EMF pump that Joe and Jerry built. This is the baby pump. We also have a medium-sized one and a big one. And what this does is we plug it in, turn it on, and it fills an area with EMF. And that's all it does is spit out EMF. So it raises that level of EMF. One of the things that we found is it increases, especially EVP captures are greatly increased when we do use the EMF. Of course, you have to turn it off when you run your audio because it will contaminate your audio. So we kind of think of it as ghost food, basically. It gives them something to work with, gives them energy. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So can people emit EMFs as well?
I've heard that theory. I have heard some people, you know, stand next to me with the K2, and if you want to see it spike, I've never seen that happen, ever.
That's one of the reasons for the blue in the spiritual sense, one of the reasons for blue, if you look at auras, and you see a blue aura that's considered very peaceful, very serene, our light is given in a blue aura, that's why a red tends to be more aggressive. So we go away from the red and we go towards the soothing. In the same sense, children emit this huge amount of light and huge amount of hope, you know, in the spiritual sense. That's why you'll hear children that are ghosts are attracted to, because they've got more pure light.
Can I clarify something on the... I don't know if you call it, was it. What did you have in your hand last time you had something in your hand?
The EMF pump.
The EMF pump.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something about you get more EVPs, did you say?
Yes.
But then you said you have to have it turned off, so I didn't understand.
Okay, basically what it is, when we have it running, like we'll have it running a lot of times when we use it on an investigation, we'll have it running during setup, or we'll have it running during break. But when we actually go in on our sweep, we'll turn it off. Okay. So the EMF field has already had a chance to build up, and...
Otherwise, you get static or something.
It really messes with the audio. It gives a lot of
loud.
Yeah.
Is this an issue for people with pacemakers? I mean, I don't have one, but I'm just saying, you know, because you're pumping out a magnetic field.
Yeah, it very well could be. Yeah, you got to understand.
That's actually a good question, Jamie.
Well, you'd have to be on top of it because for pacemakers, they have to have the magnet waved in front of the pacemaker in order to turn it on and turn it off. Mm-hmm. What they're worried about is that if you got close enough, the magnetic field would actually turn off the pacemaker, and then you would be at risk of having irregular heartbeats.
So being in the vicinity would be okay?
Chances are, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to be like on top of a microwave oven and mm-hmm. things like
it's
that.
It's nice to have a warning, though, if you're going to...
Yeah, if you'll read the warnings, even on a microwave, it says like within 15 to 20 feet, you know. And that's like these. And like I said, this is a baby one. This one, you know, you can kind of tell. You got to get really close with your EMF meter for it to go off. The bigger ones, it'll give you a headache. You can feel it.
And you have to watch out.
Yeah, you have to watch out for that. And we built those like that because some of the areas we go in, like it'll do the whole area. We went to a college, and I don't know, did we run it at the college or we couldn't get it at the power? But
I don't think we did it to walking in there.
Yeah, but that's the idea. It floods the whole building. And we actually sold one or tried to sell one to another team, and it actually, at the Pride House, it flooded the whole house. Everybody complained of a headache, and they turned it off. So it was really pumping some EMFs out, and that's one of the things EMF does. It gives you headaches. So it worked, but I think it worked too good.
This Pride House is already filled with energy.
Yeah, it's full of energy, and when and doing that, they used it there, and it's like she
said. Which actually we did on our investigation of the Pride House. We did run... I think it was it the medium pump?
It was the medium pump, yeah.
Yes, we did run that upstairs.
Yeah, into the house. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing no one here has a pacemaker.
But I do know some of our investigators have electricity.
And I'm sure you saw it lighten up, especially if I hold it next to me a lot. This is one that you'll turn on and you'll set it somewhere. You can use it for communication. You can use it for interaction, that kind of thing. And just like with the K2 meter, when we use that for communication, we'll set it down and we'll ask, to light up the lights, yes, no, anything like that, or even just to show you're here, that kind of thing. Well, you can do that with the periscope as well. And like I said, it works off the static electricity. It's kind of hard to see it. If I put it against my shirt, you can see it better. But you see it lights up, all different lights here. Yeah. We have actually had a couple times since we had this, which we just got this in September, where we have had interaction through this. The guys made this for Paranormal Kicks Cancer, which is a charity event that we do every year where the proceeds go towards cancer charities. And Paranology's actually made one specific for our event that they raffled off, and the winner won, and they're so amazing. They did it in the colors of what our cancer charity for that year was. Then down there, the geopod.
What's the principle behind that?
It's like a pod, is what it is. You see the electric pods that light up. When static electricity, it picks it up.
This is just static electricity?
Yes.
This is just static electricity.
If you have like a storm or something, though, you might end up...
Well, right, and that's one of the things, of course, that you would have to be mindful of when you're investigating. And, that's a lot of the things that we use. You do have to pay attention to your environment with its use.
Having an electrical charge can get close to them, touch them.
Mm-hmm.
There you go, all good there, Tim.
Or if you need 1.21 gigawatts.
This is a geopod. This was originally invented for people that study earthquakes, movement of the earth. That's what this is supposed to do.
Yeah, it's very sensitive.
Very sensitive. What it does is when you move, see how it picks up, you put a camera on that, you put it down a hallway, and if there's nobody there and something's walking, footsteps, a lot of times we hear footsteps.
All right, don't do that.
That's supposed to
put it back there and see. See how sensitive it is?
Oh, and you can adjust the sensitivity on
you can adjust sensitivity. There you go, do it again. See? And now the harder steps. And you can get it all the way up where, see my finger setting it off.
And that's another communication device. Make this light go off. And you can use a flashlight for that matter. Here, turn this light on.
And these geopods are great to use. Like at the OTT, one of the claims that they have is hearing footsteps. So when you have something like that where you have an area where people have claimed that there's footsteps and they hear someone walking but they never see anybody there, that's a location where you can set the pod up. And, if that starts lighting up and you don't have a team member down the hall or in that room or in the vicinity and it's lighting up,
There's some apps for that as well for the Android and
we don't let our teams use cell phones on sweeps.
I tried them.
And why don't we use cell phones on sweeps?
Oh, good point.
Emit.
Electromagnetic field.
Right.
we do a lot of what this team more than a lot of, well, not more than.
We'll try and hurry and finish
this
up.
Talk about
everybody
my
wants
favorite.
To get to investigating.
I'll talk about my favorite. This right here is a flashlight.
This
is going to be very helpful for plug
cameras.
Yes, but this one I like because look, hey, it's a blue light. We've already talked about the theory of blue lights. It's a theory, but it's cool. It looks cool. Plus, it gives you light when you walk around a dark room.
Yes.
But you should have one. We don't like using them that much. because we, a lot of times, you get a light on the wall, the camera picks it up, somebody thinks, well, it's an orb. No, it was probably a flashlight. But if you need to see something, you have a light. You can get to see things. That's one thing you need to have, too.
We've already talked about never investigate alone. Now, there are times, of course, we will not be worrying about this tonight. There are times on an investigation where we will send a team member in by themselves. That's based on specific conditions, things that are happening that, you know, may not happen with a group of investigators. And when we do, they're always on camera. Our teams, of course, always have walkies. And we always stay in touch with each other. Sweep teams have to stay together at all times. We're very big on contamination. We do not want, we want to eliminate as much contamination as possible. And we've actually had team members leave our team because they didn't like the fact that they couldn't just wander around wherever they wanted to during the investigation, which is fine. That's just not how we operate. We have sweep teams. We know where everybody is at all times, and you never leave your sweep team. We always have somebody stationed at command monitoring, you know, the monitors and everything. And then after sweeps, we do take a break so that everybody gets a break as well. But when you have a sweep team that's, say, investigating in a bedroom, and they're hearing some noises and, you know, footsteps and things coming from down the hall or a room down the hall, well, we know there's nobody else up there but that sweep team. Now, sometimes if they hear a loud noise, if we have, like tonight, we'll have a team downstairs and a team upstairs. If you hear a loud noise and you're not sure, you can always radio to command and find out, is there somebody in the hallway, you know, or radio the team downstairs, did y'all just make a loud noise, something like that, so you can rule it out. But always stay together and stay in your designated area. That's just for contamination reasons.
Keep in mind, people live here tonight. You'll hear people on and off all night going through the hallways. It doesn't mean it's a spirit. Just check with, you know. Another thing, too, like she's saying with the sweep teams are down here, the other sweep team should be at command and being quiet. Because if you're outside laughing and hooping and hollering, the recorders are going to pick it up. So
if you're on break while another team is investigating, it's fine to be outside. It's fine to be at command, either place that you want to be. But don't travel back and forth. Once that sweep starts, you need to stay either at command or outside so that we don't have that contamination going on. Because if you're investigating, you want to be able to have the full experience of investigating and not have a bunch of people, you know, tromping around and making noise and, you know, where you cannot investigate. Do your bathroom breaks on break. And if you're outside or if you're at command, like Joe was saying, you know, keep it down. You're free to talk, you know. I mean, we're going to be talking, trust me, you know. But keep it down and keep it quiet, just out of respect, not only for those who live here, but for the other teams.
And the digital recorders are fairly sensitive, so you could be in a room upstairs and somebody outside could actually be talking and whispering, and your digital recorders could pick that up, and you may think that's an EVP, but actually it's just background noises.
And that's another thing with the audio is that we do what's called tagging. And if you hear a dog barking outside, you want to say, dog barking outside. If you bump into the edge of the bed, you need to say, that was me.
That was me.
That kind of thing,
right. It sounds horrendous on the tape.
Yes. And do not whisper at all.
Because you're going to think it's a ghost.
Right.
So whisper comes out as a whisper on the audio.
And if you accidentally whisper, you know, if you bump into something and you're like, then, you know,
that was me.
Sorry, I whispered, you know, that kind of thing. But tag everything, because when you're playing back that audio, you want to know, you know, was that someone on the team? Was that me? And when you're tagging, you're going to know, because you'll have that. And if you do hear something, say that you're upstairs and you hear a loud noise in the hallway or downstairs, you radio to command and it's cleared that, no, there was no one there, tag that on audio. Say, you know, note for audio, we just heard a loud noise, so that when you review, you know, listen for that. Did we pick that up? Right. Snoring. Right. No snoring.
We've actually picked Shane's voice up. We've been upstairs in the house and picked his voice up.
Right.
From outside.
Didn't even hear him.
Now, we're at the point, we're so familiar with each other on our team that we recognize our voices. So we'll say that was Shane, you know, because we're so familiar with each other's voices. Right.
You're like, that was an evil.
No, that was Shane.
Now, also with your audio sessions, when you start a session,
you want to start it out with the date and time and location. So if you start your audio session, Lola, you know, you can start out, this is Saturday, February 23rd, Ott Hotel. Thank you. You know, and then whoever's with you in what room, you know, like Joe and Jen in the dining room. So that way when you review, you have, you know, what follows this, where was I, and the location for the EVPs. Because when you play that back later and you can correlate your evidence, well, this happened in this room and this happened in this room and that kind of thing as well.
One of the things, too, real quick, and I know we're kind of trying to hurry, but sometimes, like I say, if it's just me and her investigating, usually some one of us is the one asking the question. The other one's feminine or doing the meter. And if I go and I don't think to tag it, she thinks what male was in the void. She knows. She's already said that was Joe. So she can go back and she can kind of rule that out. That wasn't a growl. That was Joe. Because a lot of times she'll be asking the questions and I'm either filming or I'm checking the meters. You know,
I had to try to listen to
between questions for the spirits to respond. Typical good safe time is about 30 seconds. Don't be boom, 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 because then you're going to, you know, if they're responding, you're talking over it. So
it
give a space.
That's when you get the EVPs that say, shut up already.
Now also, yeah, I can't reach one, but a recorder.
But you know what?
Make sure.
A lot of times they seem to respond to you if you're having more like a casual conversation. Mm-hmm. They may interrupt or intercede in that conversation more so than answer a direct question.
Exactly. So you can mix that up. You don't have to do question, question, question. You can have a conversation with the other people on your team because a lot of times they like to just pipe in. Now, also be careful the way that if you're holding the recorder, the best thing to do is to come in and set it down. Because if you're holding it, you're kind of moving around, you're fidgeting. When you play that back, it's going to kill your ears and you're not going to get anything.
It sounds like somebody surfing down a rock hill.
It's almost like recording outside with the wind blowing. All right,
Kelly's reminding me that we're like... That's another thing, like air conditioners, fans, things like that. If you can turn them off, turn them off, because that's going to contaminate your sound.
All you're going to hear is... That's all the whole tape's going to be.
All right, we talked about the baselines. We talked about Command Central.
No question. I've got an audio recorder, but I have the foam... For wind noise and stuff, should I record with it on or off? What is best?
I would say probably off.
Yeah, if
because that would filter.
And now I'm going back to David Roundtree, and I actually asked him this question. That's to cover up noise. If your mic is stationary, then you shouldn't have
inside.
A problem. You're inside.
Right.
You're more sensitive with it on.
Yeah, that's just to keep that wind noise out. And like she said, when you're moving it, see, that's not making any noise. We can hear, but when you play that back, it sounds like a gravel truck out of control.
Right.
It's terrible.
Yeah, and when you get up and move to another room, you need to tag that also. Say, okay, we're leaving, we're walking down the hall, now we're in room such and such. Because, you know, a lot of times you're going to forget when you're listening to that audio and, you know, wondering, what's going on? What's this? You know, what's all the noise? And because you are going to make a lot of noise moving.
And when you label your EVP sessions, you should also say session number 1, 2, 3, whatever it may be. So therefore it gives us a time frame of when that was taking place. Not only the date and the location of where you're doing it, but this is session number 1. Well, I know on mine I started session number 1 at 11 o'clock or session 2 at 1 or what have you. So at least it also gives you a time frame of when any evidence may be there when it occurred.
Okay, provocation.
We don't do it.
We do not use provocation. This is a spy policy. We need to remember that, you know, spirits were once people too, at least the majority of them. And especially here at the Ott, you know, we're coming here as guests in their home, basically. So we don't want to use provocation. You don't want to get nasty with them. You don't want to get all overly confrontational, nothing like that. You want to be respectful.
Well, I like
now,
that.
There are cases where spy has used a type of provocation. Sometimes we've come across cases where we're dealing with something negative. Excuse me. And, oh, God, can you get me my drink?
Sure. Which one?
I'm like getting all
Which one is it?
The one that says gin.
At the very end, it says gin.
You know, and we've dealt with demonic cases and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, if it's demonic, the problem is we need to know. So we're going to do a little provocation because we're trying to get it to interact with us. We're trying to get those scratches. I know
that's
that sounds
after
crazy.
We've ruled other things out.
After, yeah.
And we do what is called spiritual provocation. And that's doing reading scriptures from the Bible, saying prayers, things like that. Now, sometimes when we're dealing with something nasty, or as Kevin would call it, a friend of ours, Mr. Nasty, we will do a little provocation, but not anything real confrontational. We have to remember, we're leaving at the end of the night. Our clients have to come back home.
You don't want
here at the Ott, we're leaving. Susan and the people who live here have to stay.
Yeah, unless
so you don't want to anger something that they're left
and
with.
take out on them. Something else when you were talking about we're leaving at the end of the night. This is something also that needs to be brought up. Sometimes you can get followed home. Understand that you're putting yourself in a situation. They're curious. Some of them are more than curious. And trust me, it happened because it happened to me. I went to the Pride House and something followed me home. Now, it left after I told it to leave, but sometimes it don't leave. So when you leave here, leave an area, make sure in no uncertain terms it understands whatever's here. Do not follow me home. You are not allowed to. I forbid you to follow me home. And say a prayer, whatever you feel comfortable, that'll help you out. And I know I may be out of range on this or out of the line, but I wanted to say that too. Because they will follow you home. You know, understand that.
Now, also another thing that's spy policy is that we do not engage in any type of witchcraft or occult practices. It's, you know, one of those things we do not do, we will not do. We will not do it on events. We will not do it on investigations.
No seances, Ouija boards, none of that.
Right. We've dealt with too many cases where the reason we're there is because somebody was doing something that they had no idea what they're doing. They didn't know, you know, how to do it, what they should be doing, anything like that. It's too easy to cross into an area that you're not real sure what you're doing. And
you can very easily open a door for something
that
knows what it's doing. And
yeah,
it's,
and what comes
what
through,
it's just the way it is.
You might not be prepared for.
Yeah,
right. Now, we will do home blessings. We also will do crossing overs and things like that. But we take that more into a spiritual realm and when we work with those.
Smudging. We burn the sage.
Which I think Maria has some in her purse. Ours is upstairs. And then another thing that is very, very, very strict spy policy is that there is no drugs, no drinking before or during investigations. And you'll notice, you know, those of us who smoke, we'll smoke on break. Smoking is never allowed during a sweep or in an investigation area. So even if you're on break but you're in an investigation area, you're not allowed to smoke in there because the smoke's going to linger. One of the things that you have to be aware of also are smells that a lot of times go off. That's why we don't wear perfumes and, you know, things like that.
Cameras
you know,
will pick up a smoke cloud and you think it's a ghost and
right.
It's a smoke cloud.
And you know, careful of what you're wearing.
TV, like these ghost adventures and shows like that, and they show a picture of a smoke. It's somebody was smoking a cigarette as far as I'm concerned. That's what it looks like to me, and that's what it looks like on the film.
And some spirits will communicate with the smell of tobacco, grandpa's old cigar or pipe smoke, and if you're already infiltrating your room with smoke, it interferes and you don't really get to pick it up. So aroma is a great trigger or a form of communication.
One of the last cases we were on in Jacksonville was considered to be demonic. There was an area in the house that smelled like rotten meat. And we thought, well, maybe it's garbage.
Well, it would travel, too.
And it would travel, and that's what gives you the sense right there. You get here and you can't smell it, but you move over here and there it is. It would move. It wasn't the garbage. It was something else. And that's another reason, too. If it was smoke, and smoke burns your senses out, and you can't smell anything. So you need to be able to pick that up. And that's just an example, too, of what we're talking about.
Now, also, when you're taking your pictures, you need to be careful. One of the things that we always have our investigators do is that before you take your picture, you say flash. And the reason that we do that is because it lets the other investigators in the room know that you're about to have a flash. Close your eyes if you don't want to be blinded. But also it lets the other investigators know, if I'm taking, you know, about to take a picture and Cheryl says flash, then I wait. And I wait until her picture is done before I do mine. And the reason that we do that is so we don't have the crossing flashes. And, you know, she knows when she takes her picture where she's standing, all of that, and what her flash reflections will be, so to speak. And so that way we keep that contamination down as well. So be aware when you're taking the pictures of reflective surfaces, mirrors, things like that, because they are going to pick up the flash. One of the techniques that we use also is that we'll take a picture with flash and without flash successively, if your camera's set up to do that. And also try and take more than one picture in the same spot. So that way, if you have a picture and you take, you know, you're standing here and you take two pictures, and something shows up in one and not in the other, you have something to compare it to as well. Anything else on that one? Nope. Okay, awesome.
Questions?
So, always make sure your equipment ready before a sweep. You know, like we have some things that need batteries. We'll have to pop those in, make sure things are charged, you know, that your equipment is ready to go. If for any reason when you're on a sweep that you feel that you need to leave your sweep, if you get sick, if something happens, you know, if you get, you know, something touches you, you freak out, whatever, try and remain calm. You know, we don't want to have a freak out moment, but sometimes those happen. But, you know, radio to command and let us know that you're going to be leaving so that we can let the other sweep teams know, you know, somebody's about to walk out so that, you know, if they hear footsteps come in or they hear somebody coming to go outside, that they're prepared for that and they don't think it's something else going on.
It's okay to be scared. I mean, we're dealing with something that is just not natural to what we know. When we're born, a lot of us are taught there ain't no such thing as ghosts. Well, we're here because we believe in it. And when you get something you can't see, touch, hear, feel, communicate with you, touching you, doing this, it freaks some people out.
And don't say,
it, you know, okay,
one of the things that we'll do on a sweep is we'll invite something, you know, to, you know, pull my hair, touch my arm, something like that. Now, I'm comfortable enough with my team members, and I know their level of comfort that, you know, I can say, you know, pull Randy's ponytail, knock his hat off. But, you know, the rest of y'all, you know, you may not be comfortable with that. You know, if Kelly's on a sweep with Fran and she's saying, you know, pull Fran's hair, Fran may not want something to pull, it, you know, her hair. So just be careful.
We were at a customer's house, and I said, why don't you come touch one of us? Well, the lady of the house was up there, and she told her real quick, I don't want you touching me.
Right.
You remember that? And I didn't even think about it, but just keep that in mind. Yeah. Remember, ghost hunters don't run. We walk briskly. Okay? We can walk as brisk as we want.
Holler, run, dude.
Yeah, don't ever holler. Run, dude, run.
Right. So, yes, right.
If you think something scratched you, let us know. We need documents.
Now, sometimes when you get a scratch, it's not going to feel like a scratch. You might feel a warmth. Mm-hmm. If you feel something unusual, warmth.
Yeah, that's what we felt over there.
I said warmth.
Oh, I was confused. I didn't know what a warmth was.
Oh, Lord. Anyway, if you feel something unusual, especially if you've asked them, touch me, you know, and you feel something unusual, get a flashlight, turn it on, look, have a team member check, and if it's something that needs to be documented, document it, you know, as soon as possible. So, but don't ask to be touched if you don't want to be.
Yeah. The Lake Jackson case, Maria and her both got scratched.
Yes,
and
separate occasions. And Cheryl got scratched the last time there, too. So.
Is there anyone here?
If you do feel a spot right there where it feels warm or it feels weird all of a sudden, don't touch it or rub it because then you're going to contaminate that area.
And get the thermal or an EMF or both on it as soon as possible.
Or is it just like a
It varies. It varies.
I've actually seen where a woman has been slapped, and you could see the finger marks on her face because she was making fun. Mm-hmm. She was also, her hair was pulled to where you saw hair on the floor behind her. She was also scratched where you saw like three scratch marks across her back because she was making fun and picking on this, you know, trying to act all crazy. And later on, she found out that you don't. Things like that.
One of the things too, and I've seen it happen, it don't mean it's going to happen here, but you can be in a cemetery, you can be in a place like this, and it feels like you walk into a spider web, and you're like, and there's no spider web, you're like, that right there is considered,
that's a representation of the electromagnetic field.
Yes, electromagnetic field that you just walked
that,
into,
you know, electricity type feeling, it will feel like a cobweb, something like that, but there's no cobweb there. So
are there any new guys that don't want to be touched? If y'all are in the room with us on a sweep, we'll say, hey, touch Fran or
No, we're not going to tell them to touch somebody. We're going to touch ourselves.
I know it's easy to say if you can touch one of us, and then if you don't know, it's tomorrow.
Yeah, just in tonight, just invited to touch you. Let's don't say right. Touch one of us. Because, you know, the person may be sitting here. I'd be like, rub my feet.
They never do.
But yeah, some of us sitting here may not say, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. And then deep down, they don't want to be touched. They get touched and they go screaming, running out of here. We don't want that.
Right.
You know, so just invite to touch yourself and not somebody else tonight.
Yeah. And let's not be like a Zach Bacon.
Yeah, he should be scratched.
If you don't scratch me, then he gets scratched. Right. Oh, I can scratch. Did you see that?
Okay, so I don't know if everybody has checked to see what team they're on or not.
There's only a couple.
But we're going to start out the first sweep. We're going to take a break after this. Let everybody go to the bathroom, get a drink, whatever you need to do. And then when we come back, we'll start our sweep. It'll be an hour long. We still have to hook up the cameras, run the cables to those upstairs before we start anyway.
So we don't get to have break.
But
that means smoke break.
The first sweep team, the downstairs team, will be team three, which is Phil, Fran, and Tracy. And starting with them tonight will be Joe and Jerry.
Thank you very much.
And then team two will be upstairs, which is Scott, Deborah, and Denise. And Cheryl and Maria will be with them. And then we'll investigate the first sweep, then we'll take a break, and then we'll move on to the next sweep.
Well, here it is, almost 5 o'clock in the morning, and we have been at it all night long, pretty much, with doing the sweeps, taking the breaks in between, and all that. So, had three different groups. I guess you guys kind of heard that. And so what they did is that we then went to each of the rooms, and we would ask questions. We had all of the equipment, you know, waiting to see and hear anything. And Jamie, what was your experience here so far?
Well, it is a definitely an old place, definitely very spooky. The caretaker and owner is a very colorful character, very passionate about the building and the history.
Yeah.
And so she's done a lot of research and everything, and so it made for a very enjoyable experience. Although, me personally, I didn't encounter anything ghostly other than maybe... I think you said I was snoring in between a couple of those sessions. So that was my ghostly encounter.
But from, I don't know about in your group, but we did have, you know, one of the young girls in our group in the very first room had her leg touched, that she was feeling something pressing on her leg. And, you know, we heard some tapping noises and things like that, but I kind of attribute that to squeaky, you know, settling of the old building and everything, being right there literally just yards from the railroad. And there was certainly were like 6 trains that came through tonight. It rattled the building and everything. But then a little bit later, she also was, you know, feeling something touch her, and her back felt warm. And I think she had... perhaps experienced a scratch on her back or something that she attributes to that experience.
Well, what I heard was they checked and they didn't find any visible scratches, but there was some thermal imaging through the FLIR, which is a forward-looking infrared device. They were able to see that there was a change in temperature in the area. She was feeling some kind of discomfort or whatever it was she was feeling. But again, that's what I heard. I didn't see it firsthand, and you know, those experiences are very personal, and unfortunately, I didn't experience anything like that.
Well, they are pretty personal, of course, and that one of the fellows who was with the Ghost Hunter group felt something pass through him. He said he felt like something was kind of tickling his elbow.
Speaking of passing, I think
that's a skunk. Yes. Wee, that is bad.
Yes.
Oh, my. Oh, my, that is bad skunk gas. Gee, Minnie. And speaking of that, we're driving into a full moon here this morning early, and also that it was freezing cold. Temperature was, freezing cold, 40 degrees out there. So it's...
For us, Texas, that's freezing.
That's pretty cold, that's right. And they didn't have much heat there in the hotel either, so it was pretty cold inside as well. But anyhow, yeah, the one of the fellas in my group in the third sweep that we went through kind of felt something tickling his elbow, and he said then he felt like a cobweb or something kind of over his face, and he had to get up and move from the room. There were different people that kind of felt different things or thought that we heard something. We had to go back and listen to the digital recordings and see if there was anything that might have been picked up digitally that we didn't see or hear with the naked ear or see with the naked eye the first time around. In talking with Joe, one of the guys with the SPI, is that Southern Paranormal Institute? Is that what that SPI stands for? I think something like that.
I'm not really sure. I have to look it up.
You have to look it up. Anyhow, he was saying, probably 99% of the time, there's really not much that's going to be happening that's significant. And he said that those times whenever you really think something's going to happen, nothing happens, and vice versa. When you think nothing's going to happen, then wow, something really kind of smacks you across the face, almost literally. So, but you have to keep searching, and so we shall. Jamie, any last thoughts, anything here?
Well, even though I personally didn't experience anything paranormal, it was a fun time. It was a fun group. I definitely would recommend it to anyone who is curious. I would definitely recommend this to the person who is an enthusiast about the paranormal. And, I think you should come and visit the hotel. It's a very interesting place. And don't plan on getting any sleep with the trains passing through, because it feels like you're in a train station when the trains pass through. I mean, I have no idea how people sleep.
I don't either. Yeah, because, they blare their horns and they're going through the town like that, and wake up everybody. And, again, it's so close. The building does rock. I'm not exaggerating.
Nope, not at all.
So, tell me, I didn't get a chance to go in and see the computer and everything, but you went into Susan's office and you got experience a little bit. What went on there?
Well, what she did was she showed us a couple of photographs of evidence, to me those photographs were open to a lot of interpretation. They were obviously slower shutter speed on some of the exposures. There was some interesting things to look at. I couldn't tell you if I was looking at something paranormal or something that just a trick of light. To be honest with you, I didn't see anything really compelling. I did see some images and some shapes and, some weird-looking pictures, but again, there wasn't nothing like...
It was open to interpretation.
Correct, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. But, yeah, something that I can understand, those who would have a passion for this, of trying to seek it out, as Joe said, that there's 99% of the time that you're not going to see something, but that 1% of the time makes you a believer, I guess.
Right. And, Maria was there. Maria's a psychic, and she said that she felt some energy, but not as strong as in the past, and maybe that was our lack of experience or lack of experiencing any kind of paranormal activity. Maybe that was to confirm that.
Yeah, because she has certainly had a lot of experience as being a sensitive or as a psychic. And a little bit earlier at dinner, we talked with her, as you heard. So anyhow, I think that's about it. We're, again, heading back home to Houston, so we've got about another hour or so and see daybreak. We watched the sunset. Now we're going to be watching it rise here. And all the wiser, also. Had a great time. So, Jamie, it's very good joining you, and thanks a lot for inviting me along with this then, too. Had quite an experience.
It definitely was an experience, yes.
For sure. So, for the Magic Word, at Jamie Salinas, and this is Scott Wells. Scotty out.